He agreed it was best to give the Maxalts time to consider the implications of the strike at Argathus, and we set a date for the UN Navy's big debutante ball. Then we jumped away again, with Skippy whining that Valkyrie should have gone in to have the tires rotated or something like that.
Replay at 1/4 speed,
Admiral Reichard of the Maxalt's hegemony ordered, without realizing he was speaking aloud rather than through an implant. The starship's master AI wisely did not draw notice to the Admiral's uncharacteristic lapse of control. Unfortunately, the replay of the events at Argathus did not make the events any more clear.
What am I seeing?
The AI responded with a direct video, audio, and data feed to the Admiral's neural implant. These are 6 jumpworm holes, which opened at a distance of
impossible.
Having long experience dealing with its biological masters, the AI remained silent. A younger, stupider AI might have been tempted to argue, knowing it was not only right, it was obviously right. 6 jumpworm holes had appeared over Argathus, 6 relativistic darts had emerged, and 6 darts had impacted the surface so close together they might have been a single massive dart. The AI, which belonged to the fleet's sensor data analysis group, was impressed by the attack. The strategic defense AIs at Argathus were also impressed, though whatever thrill they derived from observing the unprecedented action was tempered by knowing they had failed. The failure of the elaborate and very expensive SD systems at Argathus would be blamed on the control AIs, for the Maxalts never took responsibility for their own mistakes.
That is impossible, Reichard insisted again.
The AI was curious about the flaw in its biological masters that allowed them to dispute facts that could not be disputed. There was, in fact, a smoking hole on the surface of Argathus. If a massive crater was not there, a hole so deep that it was filled with magma welling up from the planet's interior, then why had Reichard demanded to be briefed about the incident? Biological beings were, in fact, not logical at all.
Analysis,
the Admiral ordered, ignoring the fact that he apparently did not believe the attack had occurred.
The enemy has technology substantially beyond our own capabilities and beyond that of the Rindaloo. They have taken command of an unknown number of our relativistic weapons and are able to use them against us. The jump drives of the darts apparently have been modified to provide the ability to create a stable jump wormhole inside a distortion field.
That is considered impossible, the Admiral stated.
The AI noted that Reichard had moved from declaring something impossible to noting that unnamed others had thought it impossible. Others who could be blamed without tarnishing Reichard's credibility.
It was considered impossible, the AI admitted tactfully, based on our current understanding of jump physics. There is currently no theory that can explain how a jump wormhole was able to form within the distortion field that surrounds Argathus.
The field was active?
It was operating within 0.1% of design specifications.
The jump wormholes were created by our own darts, Reichard asked,
though the darts had clearly not belonged to the Maxalt's hegemony during the attack.
Yes. The sensor data collected by the SD network is detailed enough to identify the individual jump signatures of the 6 darts, and they match our production records. Those darts were manufactured.
Reichard angrily interrupted the machine.
When and where that batch of darts were made is not relevant.
Of course. The jump drives of the darts had been modified in ways we do not understand.
Do you understand how a wormhole was able to form inside a distortion field?
No, we do not even have a theory that suggests it could be possible.
Do you understand how our darts were apparently able to jump halfway across the galaxy?
No.
Do you understand anything?
The AI remained silent. There was no useful answer to that question.
Very well, Reichard said,
after taking time to reflect on how the events at Argathus had affected himself.
The other senior leaders have been informed?
Yes.
Unfortunately for him, Reichard's flagship was in transit when he learned of the latest attack.
He feared he might be the last senior admiral to learn about the destruction at Argothis, an event that could not be explained. If the method of attack could not be explained, it could not be defended against in the future. There could be panic within the military leadership, and his foolish peers might lack the instinct to soothe the hegemony's rulers with calming words. Worse, his rivals could fan the flames of fear to discredit him. His ship could not travel any faster than it was already moving. All he could do was think hard to find a way to spin the attack to his advantage.
"This is not the time to panic," Reichert said in a soothing tone,
the effect lessened by his colleagues knowing he sent a calming signal to their neural implants, a signal they instructed their implants to ignore.
"Let us review the facts. The humans have somehow taken control of 6 darts."
"6 from a flight of 14, Admiral Tenanu noted. "We must assume the other 8 have been compromised."
"The other 7, Reichert snapped. "The last 5 status reports received from that flight indicate that 1 dart has become disabled. It has not responded to communications attempts."
"It has not responded to us. Whatever method the humans used to take control of our darts, it is clear they have capabilities we do not. They could have repaired the faulty dart."
7 or 8, Reichert snapped, irritated. 8 darts do not pose a major threat to us.
"Unless..."
"Yes, unless the humans have control of other flights. I do not think that is true at the present."
"Based on what information?"
"Based on the fact that their first strike was against Argothis."
Tenanu stared at Reichert in disbelief.
"They hit there to make a statement that they can hit us anywhere."
"That is the reason the humans declared for hitting our most secure facility," Reichert retorted. "I do not think that is true. Consider an alternative explanation that the humans have only a limited and small number of darts. They could not afford a campaign of escalating strikes, a campaign that would put increasing pressure on us. No, they had to use all or the majority of their darts in 1 massive dramatic attack."
Reichert could see his colleagues mulling over his words.
"Even if I am wrong,"
he smiled to show that notion was unthinkable,
"the humans made a mistake. Any subsequent attack they conduct will be less shocking. Future attacks will produce diminishing returns, and our public will become numb to the new normal."
Again, he saw that his argument was finding a receptive audience, so he pressed onward.
"The attack against Argothis could work to our advantage."
He held up a hand, claws extended, for silence.
"The defenses there rely on preventing wormholes from forming and on absorbing kinetic energy. The Rindaloo rely on similar technology to protect their worlds. Our ancient enemy will see that humans can hit them also. We have proposed that the Rindaloo should join us in common cause to suppress the humans before they destroy us all."
"The Rindaloo will also have seen that we do not have control of our own ultimate weapons," Tenanu reported. "How can we be useful as allies if our own technology is used against us?"
"Not allies, partners," Reichert explained. "For a limited time and for a limited scope of action. Esteemed colleague,"
he bowed slightly toward Admiral Tenanu, surprising everyone,
"you make an excellent point. The humans have demonstrated they can use our own technology against us. The Rindaloo, though we are loath to admit it, have technology superior to ours. How long until the humans take over Rindaloo weapons and use those against them?"
His question was greeted by uncomfortable silence.
"I can assure you, though our ancient enemy has a well-deserved reputation for being reluctant to take action until they are forced to respond, they will take note of what happened at Argothis, and they will understand the implications. The humans must be stopped now. Now, before it is too late for all beings in the galaxy."
The debate went back and forth. And in the end, the military leadership agreed to recommend the hegemony approach the Rindaloo about taking joint action of limited time and scope. As he left the meeting, Admiral Reichert did not know what he found more astonishing, that a young and primitive species had rocked the galaxy, upsetting the balance of power, or that the hegemony would propose to work with the Rindaloo.
Well, shit. Skippy frowned. No joy. Both items we left here are now useless. Both of them. You sure?
We had taken Valkyrie to the Gateway wormhole, which was now more or less permanently deactivated by the network. It was dead, as far as we were concerned. After verifying there weren't any enemy ships still hanging around from the blockade, we located the controller module we had left there, and a dropship flew out to retrieve it.
I'm sure, he sighed, disappointed. That power tap was already fading when we found it. Asking it to operate continuously burned it out. It's dead, Joe. If you want, I can go through its pockets to see if it has any spare change, but... And we get the idea. What about the controller?
That is not actually dead. It just won't do anything useful. Remember, it was set up to make Gateway act like it was unstable. The controller had to repeatedly establish and sever a connection to the wormhole over many months. The controller itself is still in pretty good condition, but its ability to contact higher space-time is gone. It's useless to us, or to anyone.
Crap.
Damn it, now we need two controllers.
Three, Joe, remember?
Unless you want to risk...
No, we need three. Or more.
Ah. I waved at the main display with disgust. This was a waste of time. Without a power tap, the controller won't work remotely anyway.
You, don't know where there are any power taps hanging around, do you?
No. Every starfaring species in the galaxy knows how valuable power taps are, and everyone knows what they look like. Any of them that are known are kept very well guarded.
Shit. Then this whole exercise is a waste of time.
Not exactly, Joe. We don't need a freaking Elder device to feed power to a controller. We can just use a fusion reactor.
We can?
Yes. There are plenty of compact fusion bottles in the spare parts we got from the Jarraptha. We could get a couple of those back online. Plus, we will probably need a stealth field generator for each reactor, which will be more difficult. Doable, though. If it's worth the effort, I mean.
To save us from having to fly back and forth every time the fleet needs the Jaguar or Ragnar wormholes opened? Hell yes, it is worth the effort.
Okay. The next step is to raid someplace that has wormhole controllers?
Yes, I sighed. Unfortunately.
Unfortunately.
Sims didn't understand what I said.
Yeah, this is something I would like to delegate to someone else.
You? She stared at me. Delegate an important task?
My response was a shrug.
I have to start somewhere. This would be a good opportunity for Chang and the Legion Special Ops Group.
Then, why not?
Because we don't have time, us or them. We'd have to fly all the way to Jaguar, then Legion Special Ops would need to do their own planning and training, then Skippy would have to open the wormhole to let them out anyway. Depending on how complicated this op is, maybe it's not the best idea to throw an untested group at it.
Smythe cleared his throat behind me.
The star teams assigned to the Legion are experienced Tier 1 operators, sir.
Yes. I turned in my chair to look at him. But other than a handful who served aboard the Dutchman of Valkyrie, they don't have much experience out here. Yeah, I know the Legion commando teams have fought aliens on multiple worlds. That's not the same. Besides, you're forgetting the most important reason we need to do this ourselves.
Sir?
So I don't have to listen to ST Alpha whining that they don't get any action, I said with a grin.
We do not whine, Smythe sniffed, but there was a twinkle in his eye. We express our views forcefully.
Right. It only sounds like whining. Seriously, Colonel, an away mission would be good to keep your team sharp. They haven't had anything to do since the boarding action at Snowcone.
I heartily agree.
Great. I stood up. It was a long flight back to the nearest functioning wormhole.
Exo, the ship is yours. Get us headed back toward civilization.
Show me our options, Skippy, I said as I set the coffee mug on my desk and sat down, leaning the chair way back. Sometimes staring at the blank expanse of my office ceiling helps me focus.
Options for what?
Dinner tonight is either... I am totally having the shrimp and grits, I said hungrily, my mouth already watering. No, I meant our options for getting more wormhole controllers. You mean stealing them? Well, yeah, I said with an implied duh. The stars are not the only people who need action around here, he said like a spoiled toddler. I'm looking forward to some fun. It's not fun, you ass. Bitch-slapping aliens is always fun for me, Joe. The last time I had fun was when we took out that shipyard at Ratanavir. A smile crept onto my face. That was kind of fun. Man, I wish I could have seen what the shipyard AI was thinking when Valkyrie suddenly appeared in a maintenance bay. I don't think it was capable of thinking anything right then, Joe, he chuckled. You had fun hacking into the darts, right? Sure, but there wasn't any mayhem and destruction involved, he moaned. It's not the same. Stealing wormhole controllers might be my last opportunity to have fun for a while. We'll be busy babysitting the Legion while they have all the fun. Skippy, you forget that we are going to use those darts someday soon, and before that we will have plenty of opportunities for fun. He was not convinced. What kind of fun will we be having? Why, I said in my best fake enthusiastic kindergarten teacher voice while clapping my hands. We will be moving those darts across the galaxy to position them close to our next target. Ugh, you're kidding me. Do you have any idea how dull that will be? To move a dozen darts, we have to repeat each jump 12 times. Each time we pull a dart into our jump wormhole, we then need to jump back to get the other darts. That is 24 freaking jumps instead of one, in case you can't do the math in your head. Yeah, I did know that, thank you very much. Plus, every time we need darts to go through an Elder Wormhole, we need to plan on no more than 2 darts going through at each emergence point. I need to set up a schedule to spread out the... Ugh, I can't even think about it. So tedious. It has to be done, Skippy, and only you can do it. Only you can prevent forest fires, Joe, but I don't see you standing in the woods with a bucket of water. That's not... How come I get the most boring jobs around here? Hey... If you know anyone else who can control a jump precisely enough to send a dart through the event horizon at exactly the right time without smashing it into the ship, I would be happy to let that other be and do the job so I don't have to listen to you whining about it. Whining? Is there someone else who can do it or not? No, he muttered. Are you sure about that? Bilby has watched you do it many times now. Please. I already told you. Bilby has told you. His processors are not fast enough to control the jump drive with the precision needed to... Do his processors have, like, a turbo button? Dude. Okay, sorry, stupid question. Skippy, I don't know what to tell you. We need those darts moved, and they won't move by themselves. That was not quite true. Each dart had a jump drive, but Skippy was not confident the drives would work properly after such a long time, and each drive could only be used a few times. Not enough to move the darts a useful distance. That sucks, Joe. I know, buddy. If there was something I could do to make it better, my stupid mouth said before my brain realized what was happening. Skippy cocked his head at me before I could retract my statement. Well, gosh, now that you mention it, let me think about it. He was not fooling anyone, not even the biggest fool I know, Joe Bishop. Whatever he was going to talk about, he didn't need to think about it. He already had a plan. And he had suckered me right into it. Something you could do to make up for me having to do the most painstaking, tedious thing imaginable. Hey, forget I said anything, I blurted out in a panic. Clearly there is nothing we poor monkeys could do to... Oh, I know! He snapped his fingers. Joe, this could be a win-win for everyone. Somehow I doubted that. You really don't need to go through any trouble for us. Oh, it is no trouble at all. Remember how I was composing music for the movie about me? Okay, yeah, that movie got canceled. It did, through no fault of my own. Right, let's focus on that and not the cloud that will freeze my home planet. Don't be an ass, Joe. Of course I care about whether your miserable ball of mud becomes a frozen ball of mud. It sounds so sincere when you say it like that. Oh, shut up. Do you want to hear my idea or not? Well, if you're giving me a choice, I... He was not. Ignoring me, he gushed. This is a fantastic opportunity. My movie deal got canceled, but... Geez, Skippy, I would love to hear your soundtrack, but without context, it won't... Don't worry about that, Joe. There will be context. I realized, since my character in the movie is all CGI and Joe the Monkey is CGI also, then hey, why do I need actors or producers or a director at all? You made a movie by yourself? I made a masterpiece, Knucklehead. And you, along with the entire crew, are invited to the world premiere. Trust me, this will be a truly breathtaking experience. It is hard to breathe when you're barfing, I said in my head, only my traitorous mouth didn't get the memo and spoke those words aloud. Hey, you jerk, I would love to see a movie, Skippy. It doesn't sound like you want to see it, he sniffed. Sorry, I said again. Man, if I had a big barrel of sorries, it would be running low at that point. How long is this movie? Well, the director's cut is 6 hours, with how about the theatrical version? I'm the director, dum-dum. Mine is the only version. Okay, I have an idea. No, it's too crazy. What? Forget I said anything. I waved a hand, pretending to be embarrassed. Teasing Skippy worked great for his man-crush Brock Steele. It was my turn to try it. Tell me, he pleaded. It's just that instead of dropping the entire 6 hours at once, how about you release it 1 hour per week? Ugh, Joe, to fully appreciate my artistic vision, you have to watch it straight through. Right, I'm a dumb monkey. Like I said, ignore me. It's just... What? Well, when you drop only a 1 hour episode each week, it builds anticipation, you know? After each episode, people talk about it and try to guess what will happen next week. You create a buzz by doing that. People can't wait for the next episode. I hadn't thought about that. You're right, Joe. How did that happen? Just lucky, I guess. We have a plan? Yes, I will roll with the first episode on movie night. Crap. The crew loved movie night. If I spoiled it with his crappy home movie, the crew would hate me. No, Skippy. Your show is special. It should have its own night. How about Fridays? Friday nights were when the crew on duty in the galley made an extra effort. That would be something to look forward to, no matter how awful Skippy's shows were. Genius! Wow, you are on fire today, Joe! I would be on fire for real, because the crew would burn me at the stake when they heard how I sold them out. In my defense, I managed to make the agony more manageable by cutting his 6-hour crap fest into 1-hour segments. Thanks, you inspired me, I said, without gagging. It never hurt to suck up to Skippy. Can we get back to my question? What are our options for stealing wormhole controller modules? Ranked in order of easiest or most entertaining? Let's skip the fun factor for now. You are such a killjoy, Joe. Okay, fine, he huffed. The easiest option is a set of controllers held by the Esselgen. Let's put that aside for now. They're a Tier 2 species, and we haven't done anything to piss them off yet. They are clients of the Maxolks, Joe. They don't need a reason to hate us. Yeah, well, let's not give them any incentive. We shouldn't make any new enemies unless we have to, okay? What's next? The Vreen. Again, that would not be my first choice. The Vreen were peers of the Giraptha in terms of technology, though not in terms of territory or military strength. The Beetles were responsible for 36% of territory under the Rindaloo Coalition, while the Vreen were assigned less than 22%. Let's not attack potential allies. Jeez, that leaves the Bosphorak. Show me. A minute later, I shook my head. Nope. Why not? He demanded. Those bird brains are holding a pair of controllers in a bunker on a moon they pretty much have abandoned. A raid would be easy in, easy out, minimal risk, even if I wasn't involved. Skippy, think about it. I have thought about it, and think it through. After the raid, what happens? The bird brains get pissed off at us. But they already are. So, no. What happens is all the aliens across the galaxy will know that we raided that facility to acquire wormhole controller modules. Those two modules are the only valuable artifacts stored at that base. They don't know those devices are wormhole controllers, numbskull, or they would be held under better security for... Oh, you see now? Yes. Shit. Everyone in the galaxy would know we consider those devices to be extremely valuable and start asking questions. Exactly. The last thing we want is for the spiders to look closely at the controllers they have. They do have controllers?
Yes, there are several hundred scattered around the galaxy. They weren't especially rare back in the day. Each Elder Starship carried several of them.
Crap! If the Rindaloo realized what those controllers do, could they use one?
Shmaybe. It would not be easy, but it is not impossible, I guess. They do have a crude understanding of transdimensional technologies. If the spiders can screw with wormholes, that would be bad, but not a total disaster.
Wrong, Skippy. If the spiders ever acquire that ability, and the kiddies don't have it, the kiddies would be at a huge disadvantage. They would risk becoming irrelevant. In that case, the Maxalts might trigger a war that could destroy everyone.
Ugh!
Why is dealing with you meat sacks so damned complicated?
It's not fun for us, either.
Well, then this isn't going to work. Any place we steal controllers from, we'll know what we took.
Not if we erase our tracks by nuking the site from orbit.
Whoa! That's against the rules, Joe.
Now, we don't actually have to use nukes, Skippy. That's just an expression.
Okay, then I suggest we hit the Wurgalin. They have four controller modules in a museum in a museum? I asked, astonished.
Like squid moms and dads drag the kids to look at dusty things and exhibits?
Yes. The Wurgalin collect all sorts of artifacts, but because they can't afford anything truly valuable, they like to make up in volume what they lack in quality. It boosts their fragile egos to have elder items, even if they are considered useless junk. Along with wormhole controllers, the museum contains a whole lot of elder stuff that truly is entirely useless.
Show me.
He did.
This is perfect, Skippy.
Are you sure? There are other options that... Well, I'll look at them, but... I tapped my laptop screen.
This one is perfect.
Okay, I'm forwarding the info to Smythe and his gang of ruffians. He needs to plan the op.
A simple smash and grab, Joe? He asked, a bit too eagerly.
We don't have to sneak around anymore, so we...
We still need to get in and hopefully out before the squids know we're there. Getting caught in a firefight could damage the controllers.
Oh, good point.
Don't worry. Hopefully the op will be silent, but there will be a boom at the end.
Oh, goody!
Chapter 17. We jumped in 30 light seconds from the target, a Wurgalin planet that was absolutely nothing special except for the museum in their capital city. That museum was also nothing special, except for the collection of Elder artifacts that were on prominent display. An Elder starship crashed on the planet millennia ago, and the site had been thoroughly stripped of anything considered remotely valuable, so the collection was left over junk. But the Wurgalin were proud that it was their junk. They had no idea that their collection held four devices that could be used to communicate with wormhole network AIs. The labels on the displays speculated that the items were anti-gravity field generators.
Whatever.
All we cared about was that museum security was appropriate for ordinary valuables like art and jewelry, not for machines that could alter the balance of power across the galaxy. We were close enough to get a nice, nearly real-time view on passive sensors, so I switched the main display from the usual tactical grid to a visual feed where the planet looked like a blue and brown baseball with half of it shaded on the right side.
All right, Skippy, show me what's out there.
Instead of a dizzying view that zoomed in rapidly, he just did a dramatic screen wipe on the display, and suddenly the planet was right there in front of me in amazing detail. Half of the surface was ocean, but overall it was a dry world with vast expanses of desert. If you were hoping for something like Tatooine, you will be disappointed, because there was only one orange star in the sky. The place did have two moons, a small potato-shaped rock that might have been a captured asteroid, and a sphere half the size of Earth's moon. The big moon was remarkable only because its surface was so bland. It was almost uniformly light gray and lacked the dark seas of dust and big craters that made our moon special.
What a boring ball of rock, I commented.
Yep, Skippy agreed.
It's not exactly...
Oh my, he gasped, enhancing part of the image on the display to focus on the light gray ball that orbited the planet.
What?
I instinctively tried to rise from my chair, held in by the automatic restraints.
Joe, that's no moon.
Holy sh... I snapped my fingers to get the pilot's attention, too shocked to speak.
Bah!
Skippy convulsed with laughter.
Oh, that was a good one! Damn, I've been saving that for years! Of course it's a moon, you numbskull!
You ass! I shook a fist at him. Do not do that!
Come on, Joe, I had to do that!
There was no point arguing with him. Don't do it again. Can you be serious for a minute?
I'll try.
Is there anything you see that could change our plans?
No, everything is exactly as I expected. A single light cruiser is docked at the space elevator. It will not cause us any problems. The squids installed a strategic defense sensor network in orbit, but never followed up with stealth weapons platforms. They will never see us. Or their sensors might detect us, but they will never report their data. Hey, it is even raining over the target now. It can't get any better than that.
Good. Program a jump, please. Colonel Smythe, this is the Star Team show.
We might have a teensy-weensy problem, Skippy announced in Major Frey's earpiece as she plunged in a halo dive through 36 kilometers altitude over the capital city of the planet. The world was nothing special, being smaller than Earth and less dense, so surface gravity was only 83% of what she was used to. It was mostly dry and cool, with less free oxygen, not that she would notice in her mech suit.
No, we don't, she replied, one eye on her rate of descent, the other scanning the enhanced image of the city below. Nothing was highlighted as a threat. No missiles, no incoming aircraft, no ships jumping into orbit, no active sensor pulses.
We don't?
No, we don't, she insisted, as her ears picked up the high-pitched whistling of thin air rushing past her helmet at supersonic speed. She was approaching the point where the drogue chute would deploy to slow her fall.
We can't have a problem, because before my team jumped out of a perfectly good spacecraft, you assured us that you have complete control over every sensor, weapons system, and communications network on and around this planet.
Were you lying about that?
I might have exaggerated a little.
You worthless! It's not that I don't have total access to all communications gear on the planet. I do, but, I might not have been paying attention to every idiotic thing the squids down there are saying. It's so boring. No way could I listen to all of it. Besides, even if I had been listening, I probably would not have known what it meant. Those squids were apparently talking in code, and...
Skippy, she pushed aside her anger for the moment.
Which squids? What is the problem?
Colonel Smythe, are you listening?
I am. The Star Team Commander's voice was distorted from the low bandwidth connection. Bishop is also aware.
Okay, so here's the deal. Skippy chuckled nervously. Our timing is bad. Well, actually, our timing is good. Perfect, even. Like I said, we chose just the right moment to hit the museum. It's the middle of the night down there, on the first workday following a major Wirgalan holiday. On this dry planet, we also got lucky that there is a steady rain over the city that keeps any late-night partiers indoors. The museum set up special exhibits for the holiday, and we know all that, Frey snapped, as a counter in her visor rolled toward the time when the drogue balloon would deploy automatically.
What is the problem?
The problem is someone else also decided this is the perfect time to rob the museum.
Frey bit her lip before replying.
Oh, you have got to be kidding me.
I wish I was, Skippy muttered, miserable.
This is not my fault. There is no...
Hold one, Frey grunted as the tightly packed parachute balloon shot from the top of her pack, and she splayed her arms and legs for stability as the balloon inflated in a long, thin drogue to slow her supersonic plunge toward the surface. The tether connecting her to the drogue gently slid to the bottom of her pack until she was falling headfirst, tucking in her arms to smooth the airflow around her. Skippy's control of the air defense network sensors should mean no one would notice her team falling at supersonic speed. But the beer can had proven to be less than 100% reliable. Plus, there was no reason to ignore proper procedure. Checking on her team, she saw they all were in the proper orientation, descending at the prescribed speed, altitude, and on course for the roof of the museum. There was a crosswind at ground level, the air moving at 90 degrees from the high-altitude jet stream her team would fall through. It was all manageable, even if all the automated systems failed and the stars had to steer their balloons manually. Getting to the roof of the museum was not a problem. The issue was, should they continue or steer away from the city while they still could? Technically, the two Panther dropships tasked with exfiltrating the ground team could hook onto the tethers at altitude, but Skippy warned that the safety margin on the tethers would be thin.
Far better for the team to descend below 4 kilometers where the air was thicker and the balloons could inflate to provide enough buoyancy to keep each star nearly motionless while the dropships approached. She sent a status ping to Smythe aboard Valkyrie. He immediately acknowledged her assessment that her team was on course and on schedule. So far.
Frey, Smythe ordered, slow your descent while we sort this out. We're committed now, until we drop below 12 kilometers, she warned. Understood? Smythe out.
In Valkyrie's conference room, which we were using to monitor the operation, I shared a look with my star team leader. It surprised me that he had opted to remain aboard the ship and allow Frey to take point on the ground team. His stated reason was that Frey needed experience in command. I suspected that Smythe had another reason he didn't mention. A straightforward museum heist was not enough of a challenge for him. And he was right. It wasn't a very complicated job. Until now. Skippy, what the hell is going on down there? I demanded.
Okay, so, whew! He let out a breath. A local squid criminal gang is attempting to rob the museum tonight, like right now. Don't worry, they're not interested in elder artifacts. They want a bunch of fabulous historical jewels that are part of the museum's special holiday exhibit. But that jewelry is in the same wing of the building as the controller modules we need.
Bollocks, Smythe swore.
Why didn't you know about this before? I realized that was not what I needed to focus on right then. We can cover that later. Is there anything you can do to make them go away?
Jeez, Skippy muttered.
I don't think so. I could alert the museum security system, of course. It would send the bots and guards to surround the thieves, plus contact the local police.
Do not do that, I said quickly. I'm not stupid, Joe. Anything I do to stop the thieves will also blow the op for Frey's team.
What do you think? I addressed the question to Smythe. Can the stars take out the unwanted guests without...
Whoa! Skippy interrupted.
Joe, you haven't heard all the facts yet. It must be an inside job. None of the crew are carrying any sort of communications equipment, so I have to rely on the security cameras. Someone partially disabled the museum's security system before I hacked into it. It looks like there is one adult who is the mastermind. She is not on site. The crew is 5 teenagers, plus 1 child.
A child?
Smythe's exclamation beat me to the punch. An adolescent Wargalan. He is 9 years old, a child by their reckoning.
Oh my God.
Why did the crew bring a... Because young Wargalan are small and extremely flexible before their bones set, beginning around 13 years of age. The crew needs the boy to crawl into the ventilation system from the basement, come out an air vent near the lobby, and physically unlock the back door for them. The ventilation ducts contain devices that deliver an electromagnetic pulse to prevent anyone from sending a bot into the ductwork. The gang thinks the boy can safely go through the tripwires without getting fried, but they are wrong. That boy is going to get his little brain scrambled when he passes through the EMP generators at the main junction.
Can you keep him out of the air system?
No, Joe, he's already in there. I can disable the EMP power source. That is something the gang can't do.
What a bunch of amateurs, he said with disgust.
Shit. I pounded a fist on the conference table. Whether the crew steals anything or not, they're screwing this up for us. If we back off now, the museum will be locked down tight after they discover someone has broken in.
Skippy. Smythe's jaw clenched. He looked at me. I have to ask this, sir. Skippy, if you allow the boy to be fried by the EMP device, the burglary crew will give up and go away quietly?
He caught my shocked expression.
The question had to be asked, sir.
Shit. Yeah, it did.
I agreed.
Skippy, answer, please.
The answer is no. The gang's backup plan is to cut through the back door with a plasma torch. What they don't know, because they're a bunch of stupid kids playing cops and robbers, is that door is lined with an explosive-shaped charge that will blow outward when the torch cuts into it. My control of sensors in the area will not prevent concerned local citizens from being woken by the boom when the door shreds everyone in the alley behind the museum. The average response time of the police in that area is less than 3 minutes.
That's not good. All right. Smythe, can your team handle this crew?
Certainly.
He saw my raised eyebrow.
That is not bravado, sir. We did not need to send a team of 14 dirtside for this op. 3 could have handled it nicely.
I knew that. Smythe overstaffed the away team in case anything went wrong and to give new people experience. That is also why Major Frey was taking the lead.
Smythe wanted her to gain command experience.
This is your show, Colonel. It is Major Frey's show, he corrected me gently. Frey, you are listening?
Yes, sirs. We can handle it. Although I do have one request.
On Frey's orders, the Star Team retracted their drogue balloons and dove headfirst, racing toward the ground. Racing against time, against the burglary crew that could blow the whole operation with their amateurish bumbling. Their parachute computers calculated a least time course to the roof of the museum and recommended continuing the halo descent profile, where the balloons would open at low altitude, dropping the team onto the roof before Skippy estimated the would-be thieves would get access to the building. Frey modified the chute parameters to avoid her people making a loud thump as they hit the roof in their heavy mech suits. Skippy's control of sensors throughout the city would leave the authorities blind to anything happening on the roof, but the sound might scare the burglary crew into doing something stupid and attracting unwanted attention. Separating into three teams, the stars dropped silently through the night, raindrops being expelled by a field around their helmet faceplates and passive sensor surfaces. Once everyone was safely down and all parachute balloons were retracted, deflated, and stored, Frey led one team of five down the south stairwell, while Grudzian took three others along the originally planned route down the elevator shaft. Grudzian had the simpler task. Forcing open the elevator doors at the second level of the building, the stars inflated thin cushions on the soles of their boots and engaged the whisper mode of the suit motors, making them nearly silent as they proceeded down the corridor. One pair halted to provide cover, while the other pair leapfrogged, more because it was good practice than needed at the moment. With Skippy controlling the building's sensors, the two on-site night guards saw only empty corridors and exhibit halls as the alien special operators approached the door to the museum's security office. Sealed up in a powered armor suit, Grudzian did not need to use hand signals for communication. He could have shouted, and the sound-canceling feature of his suit helmet would not have allowed anything to be heard from the outside. He used hand signals anyway because it was good procedure, and that is how the team had practiced for the mission, in a mock-up of the museum constructed in one of Valkyrie's cargo bays. 3, 2, 1, he signaled, then chopped a hand downward. One operator gently pressed the button to slide open the unlocked door, getting a glimpse of two very startled Wargalan security guards just before he shot them with stun bolts. The squids slumped over sideways, falling out of the chairs onto the floor. A smile flitted across Grudzian's face, and with the corner of one eye, he noted the monitors the guards had been watching showed the false image of an empty corridor.
"Thank you, Skippy," he said quietly.
Standing orders within the Star Team were that it never hurt to boost the beer can's ego.
"You are very welcome," Skippy chuckled.
While Grudzian's team made sure the already oblivious guards did not cause any trouble, Major Frey had her people in the cluttered back rooms of the museum. That area of the building had a frustratingly small number of cameras, so the team had placed their own tiny sensors on the walls.
"Here he comes," Skippy whispered in Frey's ear. "I can see that."
She shook her head, like trying to get rid of an annoyingly persistent fly.
"Cut the chatter, please."
The Wargalan child, dressed in black clothing that was covered in dust from the air ducts, ran toward the museum's back door. His gait was oddly mesmerizing. The multiple legs somehow avoided being tangled as they swirled underneath his upright body. Reaching the door, he hopped up to catch the door lock, but missed. Trying again, he came close, the lock mechanism a few inches above his outstretched tentacle. The little squid looked around the loading dock area, which was empty other than crates stacked in a corner. Scurrying over to the smallest crate, he got behind it and pushed. The crate didn't move. Squeezing in between the crate and a wall, the young alien strained to move the heavy object. The crate screeched across the floor in jerky motions until the young squid's legs were at full extension and it couldn't use the wall for leverage. Another attempt to scoot the crate toward the door was entirely unsuccessful. It wouldn't budge at all.
"You have got to be kidding me," Frey said, not intending to speak aloud.
"Like I said," Skippy interjected, "this is not the smartest gang of criminals on this planet."
"Ma'am,"
Sergeant Ling called when the squid tried again without result.
"Should we get out there and help the little guy?"
"Give it a minute," Frey ordered, zooming in the view.
She was curious what the little squid was doing. It had stopped trying to accomplish the impossible and was standing still, looking up at the crate. Before she could guess what the alien was thinking, he scrambled up on top of the crate and began popping the latches. When the lid was free, he hung on to the side and pushed the lid off to clatter onto the floor.
"Clever little thing,"
Frey muttered. Leaning the lid against the wall and using it as a ladder, the alien boy next strained to get the door lock mechanism opened. It came loose with a sudden jolt, tumbling the alien to the floor and flopping the lid down right on top of him. As the burglary crew came through the open door, they quietly jeered the misfortune of their youngest member, with one of them pausing to lift the lid off and toss it aside. The crew hurried across the loading dock, one of them having the brain power to shut the back door. They proceeded down a long hallway lined with doors to storage rooms, ignoring distractions, eager to get into the exhibit halls. The squid in the lead, tallest of the crew, reached the door at the end of the hallway and tugged on the latch. He turned around, jerked, bashed himself against the door, and fell to the ground as he was shot with a stun bolt.
"All targets down," Katie Frey called out as she watched the littlest Wirgalan boy sag to the floor.
She had shot the young one herself, using the low end of the stun setting suggested by Skippy.
"Grudzian, your status?"
Justin Grudzian punched through the clear composite of the display case, surprised when the unexpectedly tough material cracked, but did not shatter. He added power to his next blow, smashing the case and reaching in to pluck the first Elder artifact off its stand. His visor translated the label under the display case, which was no help as the Wirgalan clearly had no idea what the ancient object was. It did not matter what the thing once did, only that there were three of them on prominent display in the exhibit hall, the centerpieces of the museum's collection. The thing, which looked sort of like a rounded carburetor off a 1960s muscle car, supposedly could control ancient wormholes. It went first into a padded box, then into the backpack of Warrant Officer Vargas. On either side of him, other members of the STAR team were smashing display cases and stuffing useless Elder artifacts into their own backpacks without taking care to protect them. Grudzian stepped back, crunching on broken pieces of composite. Looking at the other three precious Elder wormhole controller modules, he noted that one of them was scuffed and dented. He put the two pristine units into protective boxes, one in his own pack and another carried by Vargas. When he picked up the scuffed and dented controller, its slick surface made it roll and pop out from between his arm and the torso of his suit.
"Shit!"
He scrambled to catch the device, slipping on broken shards of the display. In a 100-to-1 shot, the controller bounced first off his boot, then rolled along the floor, ricocheted off the base of a display, turned left as Grudzian chased it, and tipped over the top of the long, curving ramp that led down to the lobby of the museum. The module, wobbling erratically, gathered speed as it tumbled down the ramp, across the lobby, and crashed into a bench in front of the tall windows that gave a view to the broad, brightly lit avenue of the planet's capital city.
"Damn it!"
Grudzian swore, just as Major Frey called.
"Grudzian, your status?"
she asked. Vargas looked down to the lobby and switched to a private channel.
"Should I go down and get it?"
"The other two modules are secure?" Grudzian asked.
"Yes,"
Vargas confirmed, patting his pack. Making a snap decision, Grudzian shook his head.
"Then screw it."
Switching to the mission channel, he replied,
"We are on schedule, Major Frey. We have the packages and are on the way to meet you."
In the alley, dark due to the late hour, the rain, and Skippy having overloaded the floodlights at each end of the gap between buildings, Frey stepped back against the museum's outer wall as the van with the unconscious guards squeezed past. When it was clear, driving away under Skippy's control, she gently set down the fragile-looking Wirgalan boy in the back of a second van, settling him against the side wall so he wouldn't slide around as the van drove off through the city. The entire burglary crew was placed in the second van, bound in a sticky substance like spider silk that would begin to dissolve around the same time the stun effect wore off. When the would-be criminals awakened, they would be confused and afraid, but also delighted. At least they should be. In a bag placed securely in the smallest boy's tentacles were the jewels they had come to steal, torn out of the display case by Frey in a moment of inspiration.
"Sleep well,"
she murmured to the little alien child. All of you might want to consider a different career path, because you suck as criminals. Closing the van door, she called, Skippy, go. The van began to roll away, turning left at the end of the alley, whereas the van with the guards had gone to the right. ST Alpha, she said over the common channel, we are out of here. On the roof, the precious wormhole controllers were divided between three teams of three operators, with the useless Elder artifacts distributed evenly. Grudzian's team went aloft first, their parachute balloons rocketing upward out of their backpacks before expanding and inflating, yanking the mech-suited pirates off the building. In seconds, the chameleon wear of their suits made them nearly invisible in the rain-soaked night. Launching 30 seconds apart as planned, the two teams were away, leaving Frey and two operators on the rooftop. Durant, she called to Capitaine Camille Durant's team, who had separated from the museum teams during the drop. You have eyes on target? Durant pressed a button on the stock of her rifle with her pinky finger to verify range to the target. The range was constantly updated in her helmet visor, but that was based on passive sensor data, weak photons of the poor ambient light reflecting off the dull surface of the target. In the rain, and with the target in a darkened room behind a window, Durand wanted to be certain of completing her task with one shot. Affirmative, she said tersely, after her rifle confirmed it had a lock on the designated target. Beside her, Sergeant Lee nodded and lifted a thumb to indicate the area was clear. In the middle of the night, in the rain, in the commercial district of the city where there was no residential housing and only one hotel within half a kilometer, a single shot might go unheard. Ready. Execute, Frey ordered. Durant verified the rifle's settings in her visor. The bullet was in subsonic mode, its explosive tip active. The virtual crosshairs were lined up on the squid's bulbous head. The target would not feel anything. Never be aware of the transition between life and sudden death. With the thumb of her trigger hand, she rolled the selector switch to disable the explosive tip, changing the mode to partial fragmentation. Lowering the muzzle, she lined the crosshairs up on the target's fat torso. Deliberately going for a gut shot was against the usual rules of engagement. In this case, everyone involved had decided, screw the rules. Durand pressed the trigger. A single round was spat out, its armored tip easily piercing the regular window material, then flattening out before impacting the target. The squid jerked backwards, flopping onto the floor and spasming. Skippy, Durand whispered from force of habit. Damage. Solid hit, center mass. That squid will be dead in a few minutes unless she gets medical attention immediately. Sadly, communications in the area are experiencing difficulties. Thank you. Switching to the common team channel, she reported, Target is down. Frey replied immediately, having watched the action through Durand's helmet sensors. That bitch won't be sending children to do her dirty work anymore, she said of the dying Wergalin, the adult leader behind the burglary crew. Good work. Durant, Lee, get out of there. See you topside. Frey waited for Durand's team to get aloft, then triggered her own balloon and was lifted off the museum roof by the retracting tether. It felt more like bungee jumping than parachuting, especially as parachutes were not supposed to go up. The typical extraction plan was for all of the stars to soar up quickly and be lost in the low clouds. The balloons carrying Frey and her two companions did not inflate fully, lifting them barely enough to clear the office building to the east. In front of them was a building brightly lit on its upper floor. The top of the hotel was a restaurant, or ballroom, or conference center, or some other damned thing. All Frey cared about was that the exterior was illuminated by floodlights that shone off her wet armor as a gust of wind carried her toward the building. The balloon dipped alarmingly, dipping her below the upper floor of the hotel until she was roughly yanked upward. As she cleared the corner of the building by only a few meters, startled squids who were bravely carrying the party late into the night pointed at her and her companions. They see us. Skippy! She could have eye-clicked the balloon controls, but it was faster to implore the suit AI to help. Get us out of here now! She didn't finish her thought as the balloon rapidly inflated and the vertical acceleration made her grunt with exertion. The hotel was swallowed up by rain and clouds, lost to sight. Don't worry about it, Major, Smythe said into her earpiece.
You are clear now.
Yes, sir.
She breathed deeply to control her racing heart.
Detonating charges, Smythe announced. Now.
Even through the clouds, she could see a dull orange light as the thermite charges planted in the Elder Artifact Exhibit Hall exploded and the museum erupted in a dull red ball of fire. At her altitude, the shockwave was minimal, barely making her swing at the end of the tether. It was quickly gone, and her attention was taken by a signal from the approaching dropship preparing to snag the tether and pull her in. The investigation of the museum incident was quickly taken away from the local police by the planet's military security forces, and robots were rushed in while the building's twisted and mangled girders were still steaming in the rain as they cooled. It quickly became clear that the explosion was no act of domestic terrorism, nor was it an attack by a peer group of aliens such as the Kristang or Ruhar. Though three sets of Kristang armor were seen by slightly drunken occupants of the hotel and confirmed by the hotel's security cameras, those suits were not worn by the Kristang. Chemical and biological trace evidence collected from the remains of the museum were shocking, but absolutely conclusive. Humans had been involved. The next question was why? Why would the unpredictable, primitive, and incredibly young species be interested in destroying a museum? The answer to that question also quickly became clear. Because that building contained elder artifacts. Or, it did. The only evidence that ancient elder devices used to be there was a scuffed, dented, and now scorched artifact that was found across the street. Museum records indicated there were four of that type on display, along with two other types of elder devices, whatever function they once served. The only even remotely logical reason for humans to raid the museum was to acquire elder artifacts. The investigators concluded with pride that as humans were inexplicably, but also arguably, experts about elder technologies, the artifacts previously possessed by the museum were not as useless as all other species had assumed. It was also clear that the type of device left behind was considered useless by the humans, or they would have taken it. Which left the inescapable conclusion, the other two types of elder devices previously displayed by the museum had been taken, and therefore they must be considered extremely valuable by the humans. Leaving the mundane details of the investigation to the local police, including the puzzling question of why the humans had bothered to also kill a minor local criminal in the area, the military security force focused on the important question. Did their world possess any other elder artifacts of the types stolen by the humans? If yes, where were they, and how could they be better protected? Once the information reached the government of the planet, the top officials had two additional questions that affected all of Wargalan society. First, if any Wargalan world had the type of artifacts desired by the humans, could a deal be quietly arranged to give the items to the humans in exchange for whatever the Wargalan could get? Because whatever the humans offered would be better than the nothing offered by the Maxolks, once those apex species assholes learned their filthy lower-tier clients actually had something valuable and demand their clients surrender it immediately. Secondly, if the Wargalan did not have any other examples of the valuable artifacts, did they know where others were, and would it be possible to acquire them using non-traditional means? Which was a polite way of saying, steal them before the humans or Maxolks stole them first. In the scramble to clamp down on any information about missing elder artifacts, no one noticed that a collection of valuable jewels had also gone missing.
Chapter 18.
Success! I slapped the conference table just after Skippy announced he had intercepted a communication that the Wargalan authorities were scouring their databases for the two types of elder artifacts that were actually useless junk, and they had no interest in the wormhole controller modules that were actually priceless.
Grugian was supposed to leave one controller module in the alley behind the museum, but leaving it in the lobby was just as good for our purposes. The DNA left behind by the Star Team also sold the story that the museum explosion was not an act perpetrated by local criminals, and Frey's team, being seen by squids in the hotel, quickly pointed the authorities in the right direction. Despite the complication of someone else trying to break into the museum, the operation had achieved all its goals, and we were able to jump away without further delay. Looking around the conference table, I asked,
Can anyone think of a reason to hang around this bad neighborhood any longer? No? Okay, then. Bilby, inform the duty officer to jump us away. Mission accomplished.
Joe.
I half woke, keeping my eyes closed in the hope that whatever I heard, it was only in a dream.
Psst, Joe.
The annoying beer can's voice was whispering.
Psst, hey, are you awake?
No. Okay. It was too much to ask that he would leave me alone. He gave me only 10 seconds. Then,
sure you're not awake?
If I say yes, will you go away?
Damn it, I fell for his freaking trick every time. When would I learn to keep my mouth shut?
No, because clearly you are awake. There was a triumphant tone to his harsh whisper.
What time is it?
03:30. Is this really important? I asked, knowing that if the ship was on fire, the bridge crew would sound an alarm.
It is. Bilby and I have a question we need you to answer.
Ugh. I buried my head under a pillow. Can't the duty officer help you?
It's not about the ship.
Giving in to the inevitable, I threw the pillow on the floor. If I answer your question, will you go away?
Yes. Believe me, the last thing I want is to look at your face this early in the morning.
What is so important?
Bilby asked me why you monkeys are so effed up. His first visit to Earth really bothered him. So I suggested we study human society, starting with the basics.
Oh, crap, not boring stuff like Shakespeare.
No, he chuckled. I said the basics, breaking it down Barney style, sort of.
You watched Barney and, Kids, or whatever that show was called?
Barney and Friends, Joe.
You should know that. I am disappointed in you.
No, we watched Sesame Street.
Okay, why? Like, why were a couple of super smart AIs watching a show aimed at kids who were learning how to tie their shoes?
To understand a society, it is important to understand the propaganda they use to indoctrinate their children, he explained with an implied duh.
Propaganda?
Yes, stuff like sharing and being polite and obeying their parents.
Oh man, is this about the children's book you're writing?
It's about much more than just that, Joe.
I glanced at the clock on my Z phone. If I shut my mouth and agreed with whatever he said, there was a chance I could get back to sleep. Because I am me, I'm too stupid to do that.
I'm probably going to regret this, but what is wrong with sharing and being polite?
Please, Joe, it is far too simplistic. You are teaching your children to follow a dubious set of rules rather than to think for themselves.
Dubious? Sharing is important for...
Meh, maybe.
Should you share your sandwich if the other guy never shares his snacks with you? Should you be polite if the other guy is an asshole? And seriously, obeying parents? What if your parents are knuckleheads? Most parents are totally guessing how to do their jobs. What makes them experts about raising children?
Not having children of my own, I didn't consider myself qualified to have an opinion.
So your question is about teaching children? Like I told you, I am not the best person to ask. You should talk to people who have...
No, he snickered, as if I would ask you something like that.
No, our question is about the Muppets.
What?
The lead character is called Kermit the Frog. Is that Kermit the Frog? Like he is the only frog in the world? Is Sesame Street a creepy post-apocalyptic world where only one amphibian survived?
I don't think...
Or is it Kermit the Frog, like he is the supreme leader of the Frog Nation, ready to send his frog army to conquer the Sesame Street world and enslave the other characters?
Gee, I don't know. If not, then maybe characters use a first name plus the name of their species. But then why is Miss Piggy not called something like Miss Susie the Pig?
That's a good Oscar is the Grouch, so clearly the show's creators did have a naming convention.
Crap, for this I got woken up in the middle of the freaking night?
It's not. Also, why is Miss Piggy in love with Kermit? He's a frog, she's a mammal. What do they have in common? Frogs eat bugs, Joe. Pigs eat... Well, I guess they eat everything, but Kermit is not even warm-blooded.
Skippy, it's not anyone's business who falls in love with who, or with whom. Life is tough enough without busybodies getting...
Ugh, I don't care about that, dum-dum. But poor Kermit is in an abusive relationship. Miss Piggy is a stalker.
That show teaches children so many bad behaviors.
I never really watched the...
Sesame Street begins to explain why monkey society is so messed up, Joe.
Do you have an actual question for me?
Yeah.
What is it?
Well, now you made me forget.
Oh, did you have an actual question or are you just bored?
It's your fault, he sniffed. There aren't enough monkeys awake during the night shift to keep me amused. For a while, it was fun to screw with people while they slept, like by sending a bot to tickle their noses. But now,
you did what?
That was a long time ago, before we had such a fun chat about boundaries. He made a gagging sound. And privacy. Now there is nothing for me to do at night. Bilby runs the ship.
Aren't you busy finishing the soundtrack for your movie?
Yes, I'm working on it, but the only people who will see it are the crew of this ship. No one in Hollywood wants to greenlight a biopic about me now that Earth is under threat due to another of your epic screw-ups.
Hey, it's not...
This is so unfair.
My heart bleeds for you, asshole.
How about I do something entertaining once a week in the middle of the night, like fake a reactor overload?
No.
We argued for a few more minutes until he went away to sulk and I flopped back into the bed. Faking an emergency to amuse him was not an option, but he did give me something to think about. Keeping Skippy amused was as important as anything else I did. He did not need to be with us, did not need to help us. The current emergency of a cloud blocking sunlight from reaching Earth was merely the latest crisis we had to deal with. In Skippy's judgment, the prospect of humanity's homeworld freezing into a ball of ice and snow was less important than the threat of hostile elder AIs waking up and directing sentinels to exterminate all intelligent life in the galaxy. He was probably right about that, and I would add, take care of threat from hostile elder AIs to our to-do list right after the merry band of pirates saved the freaking world again. Damn it, we should have a card that gets punched every time we save the world. Maybe get a free cup of coffee after the fifth time.
Skippy, I called him after lying in bed for half an hour, realizing it was a waste of time because no way would I get back to sleep.
I thought you hate waking up in the middle of the night.
I do. Since I am awake, let's talk.
Do you need coffee first? I can have a bot bring a cup to you.
That would be nice, thanks. I may have a solution for two problems.
Whose problems? He asked, squinting at me with suspicion.
Ours. Yours and mine. One of them is everyone's problem.
Okay, you've got my interest.
You are bored, and we need to look past the current crisis. Someday, maybe soon, we need to locate dormant elder AIs so we can, prevent them from waking up, neutralize them, whatever.
Wow. Is this you finally being sensible?
I wish everyone was sensible, Skippy. We should be working with the spiders and kitties to stop hostile AIs from crushing all of us, but that's never going to happen. If either the Rindaloo or Maxulks knew we had a way to locate and communicate with elder AIs, it would start a freaking gold rush in the galaxy.
Unfortunately, I have to agree with you, he sighed. You meatsacks are such a pain to deal with. You would rather kill each other than work together against a common threat.
It's more complicated than that, but yeah, basically that's true. Even if we did get the senior species to work with us, they each would be looking for a way to stab the other two partners in the back. The advantages of having an elder AI working with you are just too great to ignore. The spiders, and you don't know that.
Oh, know what?
That other elder AIs would assist a biological species. Most of the AIs would consider it their duty to exterminate all intelligent life in the planet. Even if you got lucky and found an AI that was on my side of the war, there is no guarantee it would help one species against others.
You are helping us?
Yes, but as I have told you, I am unique and special.
That is not boasting. First, because I never do that.
Well, of course not.
Sometimes it hurt not to roll my eyes.
Hm, he sniffed, possibly suspecting I was being sarcastic.
And second, because it is true.
I think it is true.
Joe, I was damaged during the fight at Newark. Somehow, for some reason I still don't understand, my ship took me to the planet you monkeys call Paradise. While I was buried in the dirt there, I had a long time to reconfigure my matrix, almost build myself up from zero. I've told you before that I don't think I originally had what you would call a personality.
That is something I built, or installed, or developed, or whatever you call it.
I thought you patterned your personality on me, but you didn't know me until...
Please, Joe, that is just the details. I chose you because I figured you're a doofus, so it wasn't very complicated to make adjustments.
Wow. Thanks for the... Plus, if I had to erase that pattern and start over, it would be no great loss.
I am honored by your praise. That time I didn't try to mask the sarcasm. Hey, it's you, not me.
I forget it. Would you be different if you had modeled your personality on a woman, like Desai?
Ugh, that was never going to happen. Joe, nobody understands women.
True that.
I held out a fist and he bumped it.
What were we talking about? He asked, just as the cabin door slid open and a bot rolled in carrying a steaming mug of coffee. Pausing to savor the first sip of coffee, I tried to remember what the hell we had been discussing. I'm not at my best when awakened suddenly in the early morning.
Oh, yeah.
Trying to keep you from being bored and working to prevent hostile AIs from attacking us. Listen, can you review the mountain of data you got from the kiddies? See if you can identify the location of Elder AIs?
Seriously? Dude, what is wrong with you? Duh! If the Maxalts knew where Elder AIs are, don't you think they would...
I do think they would, duh. I'm talking about data they've collected that could indicate the location of Elder AIs, but they don't realize what they have.
Oh, Crap, that was kind of obvious now that I think about it.
Right?
You expect me to dig through that data to find hints that the Maxalts don't realize what they have?
Yeah.
They might not understand that some item in their sensor logs points to an Elder AI, but would you recognize it?
Maybe.
More like shmaybe, to be truthful. Other than communicating with other AIs like myself, I'm not sure how to detect the presence of an Elder AI.
Shit. All along I had been assuming that beings like Skippy had ways to detect each other. That blew my whole plan.
How about you look for things like micro-wormholes?
How would...
Oh, that won't work, Joe. As far as I know, I am the only AI who can create micro-wormholes.
Really?
Really. I know for a fact that capability is not native to my skill set. I figured out how to do it by adapting and modifying an unrelated set of capabilities. To establish and maintain micro-wormholes, I had to create a subroutine from nothing. For certain, I did not originally have a system to control them.
Wow. Oh, wow, that is amazing.
It kind of is, yeah.
He didn't indulge in his usual arrogant boasting. That told me he was trying to be serious for a change.
Surprised myself, actually. It was just something I screwed around with, testing my connection to this level of space-time. Between you and me, when I discovered that I could create and maintain stable wormholes, I was like, whoa, this is cool, you know?
What else can you do that other Elder AIs can't do?
That's a good question. I don't know for sure. Remember on our second mission when we got ambushed by Theranan destroyers and I warped a star?
I can't ever not remember that.
Well, I'm pretty sure other Elder AIs can't do that, or can't do it with the power I have. What I suspect is that my connection to local space-time is deeper than it's supposed to be, that I have a stronger effect here.
Damn, it would be helpful if I could remember what happened to me and what I did when I first awakened on Paradise.
Those memories are still blocked? I asked, surprised and alarmed. The unlocking of his memories caused him to bail on us at Riker's. If he had even more shocking revelations inside his matrix, we could be in major trouble.
No, not blocked. I think they don't exist. Most likely, my matrix was not functioning properly and was not able to store a log of events in a coherent fashion. There are snippets of memory from that time, but they are hopelessly confused and not in any sort of logical sequence. What I do have for memory fragments make no sense. They can't be accurate. I suppose it is like you meet Sacks having a dream.
Sounds like it, yes.
Hey, do you ever dream?
Not the way you dream, as far as I know.
I think you would call what I do daydreaming. Zoning out, letting my mind drift, you know?
Yeah, I do that a lot when you're talking.
Thank you so much. Hey, I'm just trying to be honest.
Maybe you could try being less honest once in a while.
He snorted. Like that's gonna happen. Okay, so you suggest that I examine every single piece of data I have, collected by every species we have access to, and try to see if any of it points to the presence of an Elder AI?
Yes.
Do you have any idea how much data is out there?
A lot, I guessed. Even for me, this would be a monumental task. If there is useful data, I probably have to look for patterns and datasets that have no apparent connection. I will need to construct my own metadata framework. Then, you can do it then? The question is whether I want to do it. This will be a lot of work, Joe.
Well, if you don't like puzzles, I guess you...
Puzzles?
Skippy loves puzzles. I knew that for certain. It's a puzzle. A mystery, right?
I suppose you're right about that.
What bothers me is if any elder AIs out there are awake, they could also be searching for others of your kind and beat you to it.
Beat me?
Oh, please! He blew a raspberry.
As if no one beats Skippy the Magnificent!
Okay, well, if you say so.
You doubt me? Wait, and I will show you how wrong you are.
You could be waiting a while, like months, probably years.
So I have time to contemplate how miserable I should be for doubting you.
You will regret ever doubting me, that's for sure. I'm regretting we ever had this conversation.
I know what you are trying to do, and if you think me working on this puzzle means I won't wake you in the middle of the night,
no, please. I enjoy that so much.
Ah, I'll probably do it less than I would otherwise.
Thank you.
For what?
For finding something I can do with my spare time, and for taking me seriously about the threat from elder AIs.
I always take you seriously when you talk about stuff like that.
Mostly I have to thank you for giving me hope.
How did I do that?
Before, I feared there was nothing I could do to prevent elder AIs from awakening because I had no way to locate a dormant AI. Now, I at least can do something about that. Even if the project fails, I will be doing something. You know?
Yeah, I hear you.
I held out a fist and he bumped it.
Draining the coffee that had gone cold, I stood up and walked toward the bathroom.
I might as well see if any of the flight simulators are free at this hour.
Get some stick time.
Well, now we get to find out if this stupid thing works, Skippy muttered while the ship drifted in front of an elder wormhole.
What?
You told us that the new wormhole controller modules we stole are perfectly functional.
Yes, but...
And you said there shouldn't be any trouble with powering a controller with a compact reactor. The controller module that was hanging in space 4 light seconds from Valkyrie was hooked up to a dropship that was running its power unit at full strength, plus its cabin was crammed full of power cells. That was just for the test. The real device would need a compact fusion reactor to provide power to it and to